Dude,
Yo, what's up?
what's going on?
Not too much. How's it going?
Really well. Yeah. How about you?
Good. Just got off the trainer, did a little stretching, trying to get ready for this podcast.
Let's go. What was the trainer workout?
Nothing. I'm just like riding, just like 45 minutes, zone one, zone two, just spinning the legs.
Do you do recovery rides often? And we're just rolling. We'll do an intro in a second, but I think this is interesting.
Okay, I'm not doing too much on the bike right now. I'm just kind of just riding for like general health and exercise. So you've been riding the trainer a lot lately, but not actually training per se, just a bunch of 45-minute rides, honestly.
What's the how come? What's
Just kind of resetting. After I got back from Belgium in September, I kind of just wanted, like, there's all this kind of social pressure you put on or just pressure you put on yourself to train and live a certain way, like, kind of hold yourself to such a high standard. I wanted to reset and figure out if I was actually riding my bike for fun or to try to be somebody, like, you know what I'm saying?
100%, man.
Yeah, so I'm just letting natural enjoyment fuel my activity for now.
That's what I looked at last year. I didn't know the answer to, am I going to bike races because I want to go race, or am I going to bike races because I've always gone to bike races? And that all of a sudden really freaked me out. And I was looking around thinking, I really like training. I don't know if I want to leave right now. And I had just recently moved to Blowing Rock, so it's, all new roads, just new vibes, and I didn't want to go. And so I thought, "Eh, I don't think I'm going to race." And then I missed it, and I'm glad I took that little bit of pause. I really thought that riding a lot was what made me happy and long rides, and then I just did that a ton and that got kind of boring. And then I was just really over endurance out and had no top end. I'm like, no, actually, okay, so that doesn't bring me joy. I do want to try and be fast still. It was an interesting process, so I know exactly a similar thread of what you're saying. And so
Yeah.
you strike me as man, this is like we're jumping in deep end. You strike me as a very more like well-rounded person slash athlete rather than hyper-focused cyclist, and maybe that's why you're so successful.
I go through stages. When I'm like focused on like a goal, I'm like definitely like too into my training, just like too focused. You could say I'm definitely out of balance in those periods, but I come back around, kind of swing to the opposite end of the spectrum and just have fun and not worry about training, stressing too much.
Do you think that out of balance is necessary, or do you think, said differently, do you think that out of balance is what makes you so fast when you do go out of balance per se? Or let me ask it the third way. What if you didn't go out of balance? Do you think you'd be as fast as you get each season?
If I just stayed in robot form and trained insane, I would definitely be on another level fitness wise, but I don't think I would like enjoy like I would definitely get burnt out. I wouldn't enjoy daily life, probably wouldn't enjoy racing. It would seem like a burden. So I think once I relieved that pressure off of myself, I started racing a lot better. I didn't really, start racing well until I just let myself enjoy it. It was
When was
like
that?
2018, I think. So I've been racing bikes since 2012, and I was really good at training. And I was really bad at racing for many years. And then you could almost say I kind of like gave up on the sport, I think around 2017 or so. I just like quit my job to like ride and race full time and started finally able to like get some 20, 25 hour weeks. And like my power numbers were insane, but I just sucked at racing. And so I just kind of quit for that. I think it was the 2018 season. I think it was soon after Athens Twilight. I just kind of stopped racing and stopped riding. But the next year, I came back, told myself I'm just doing it for fun. Completely switched up my training, and I was fast, but I was like the weakest I'd ever been on a bike, like kind of the opposite style of rider everybody knows me as. And I had to race that way. I had to race like I was the weakest person in the group. And also, like, I didn't have any pressure on myself to win. And but those two things combined, I started getting some results. And
So less, so you, so it was less watts. So I'm hearing that correctly. It was less watts, but it was you racing differently. Instead of let me go just be the hammer and try and crush everybody, now you're like being strategy and then you're seeing the results.
So for like the first 6 or 7 years of me racing, I didn't have any idea of what I was doing. but I was very strong. So I would try to make the race, like I would try to make the race go how I wanted it to go,
Is your
get
threshold like
like
440, 450 in these days? Are we talking?
the highest I've had it was a 20 minute at 465. But yeah, in those
I just want to put this in context for people that don't know Brock. Like, yeah, dripping in watts. So, okay.
Yeah, but that
It's
obviously does not get you race results.
good to hear you say that as well, because it's true, but.
Yeah, I started racing as if I was the weakest person and didn't initiate anything, only responsive. And, I didn't even like really bridge up to attack. So I would just, try to flow into moves. And if I didn't flow into it, pretty effortlessly, I didn't go. So just completely different racing style. And I was trying to enjoy it, so that was a big game changer.
Gotta enjoy it. Gotta enjoy that. That's, you,
Yeah.
I think that is easily missed. And I think it's always an interesting journey because a lot of us in the States, at least, we find this sport in a point where, oh, I like riding. Oh, there's people racing. I'm gonna go race. Oh, I'm hanging with my friends. I'm racing. This is cool. And then you start to improve, and we start to get more laser focused and serious. And the fun kind of, I don't want to have fun. I want to get my cat one. And I think that's when people fall off. We were talking about this on a coach's call. Then when people get, they go through cat three and then they get their cat two, and then things get hard, and the number of people that drop off. It's like, dude, you're like banging on the door of getting to your next level, and you're starting to get beat up a little bit, and that's part of the process. Like, this is hard. That's okay. We all go through it, and just people give up, and it's not fun. It's only results focused. It's all, and even more so now, it's numbers. The number of athletes that talk about other athletes, Strava, it's. I'm so glad when I started, there was no Strava. There was no comparison. I had no idea what the other 60 guys did for the past 3 months in their base training. And you show up in the spring and you just figure people out from the next 3 months of racing. And it's like, oh, that person's actually really slow. Oh, that person's actually really fast. Oh, it's just so different now.
Yeah, I definitely operate better if I am not concerned with what other people are doing. Because I listened to your most recent podcast with a rider right before this call, and I've already forgotten his name. I have a pretty poor memory, but
I'm trying to think who we just did. I
think he
we
was a
just
sprinter dude, world tour
Oh,
level, pro
Riley
tour.
Pickerel. Yeah.
And he was talking about some insane numbers. Like, I've always felt pretty good, about my power, especially being a bigger guy. It's, half of it's there just because of my weight. But like hearing him talk about numbers, I was like, man, like this is kind of like taking away some of my confidence. I'm like, maybe I'm not quite as good as I thought. Which obviously like there's levels to this, and I'm definitely not at the top. But what followed that was you can't really compare yourself. Like too many people compare themselves to like other people's data and other people's results and stuff. But what I've realized is none of that really matters in a race. Your fitness profile is like your toolbox in the race is the job, and you show up to the race with your toolbox, but your tools don't matter if you don't use them correctly, you know? So like especially this past season, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, but I stopped worrying so much about, fitness and power numbers and comparing myself and just focused on the racing. Because all that, I mean, the ultimate goal is to do well in bike races. So when you get down to it, nothing else matters, and the race, determines the outcome. So just focus on the racing.
Focus on the race. It's so watt obsessed these days. And I think that having people hear you, and so for people that don't know, whether it's been a time trial or road race, Brock has been on the Cat One Amateur Nats podium 4 times. Do I have that correct? Which 2019, 2021 twice, and 2023?
I
Did I
believe
miss
that's
anything?
correct.
Yeah. Which is ironically when you start talking about being more in the flow and not worrying about the results and you're doing the biggest amateur race and getting on the podium, which is incredible. I think that I even laugh when amateurs hide power numbers. It's like, dude, okay, you either think you're that good or you have crazy, weird self-confidence problems because like your 20-minute effort means nothing to how good of a bike racer you are. Like, what do you got to hide? And it's like, you're not Matthew Vanderpoel. Just go be you, man. Just it's social media. Go do your thing. So yeah, out of order. Let's do a little quick intro since I'm kind of throwing out some like who you are, but I'd love to hear who from you, who is Brock Mason?
I'm just a guy that rides bikes. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. Like going to Athens to train a bunch. And trying to keep everything in balance. I've been pretty obsessed with bike racing for pretty much most of the years since 2012. Had a few brief breaks from racing over the past few years. Part of it with COVID, but yeah, I've spent most of my adult life racing bikes, and I'm just trying to find a balance, trying to build some general athleticism.
Yeah, you seem from the IGs pretty good with the general athleticism. I mean, you're one of the questions I usually ask, are you in the gym? Yes or no? Brock's in the gym. It's more like, are you on the hanging rings today? Or are you like flying across in a trapeze? Like, what are you up to and how is this bringing balance? But you used to lift a lot before cycling, is that right?
No, so growing up, I pretty much just played video games. Like,
Okay.
I didn't do anything. There weren't like any athletes in my family. We, weren't too educated on like general health and exercise. You kind of just did what you want, ate what you want. In middle school, high school, played video games for like 8 hours a day. I was pretty obsessed with that.
What was the game?
Call of Duty 4, Halo 2,
So how old are you? Third, that may
32.
32. Okay, yeah.
But I did race motocross a bit. I was extremely passionate about motocross. Lived, breathed, slept, dreamed everything about motocross. Unfortunately, I was not very good at it. And I was in the gym a little bit for that, injury prevention and stuff, but I really didn't know what I was doing. I was working on a friend's motorcycle one day, and instead of him paying me cash, he gave me a single speed road bike. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I've been trying to run, like 9, 10 minute miles, but it's like blowing up my knees. So I got the bicycle, kind of felt a little bit cooler because that's how all the motocross guys were training. And showed up to some group rides. Long story
On
short, I
single
was,
speed.
in Macon, Georgia. Long story short, I was pretty good at riding a bike. And after, getting my hopes and dreams crushed at the motocross track every time I went, cycling was like the first physical thing I was good at. So kind of just switched over, and here
And
we
this
are.
was that like 2011?
Yeah, 2011, 2012.
Okay.
Right
So
around
you're what?
there.
You're 21-ish, is my
Yeah,
math right?
21.
Okay. What's the IG handle? Pedal Beaumarchais?
Pedali Boumaye. So I'm a big Muhammad Ali fan, and his
Okay.
fight in Zaire, they were chanting Ali Boumaye. And so if you add PED, to make pedal with Ali
Yeah.
Boumaye, it's Pedali Boumaye.
Got it. There's
Yeah.
Game has something with Ali Boumaye in one of his songs. I was like, either he's like a big Game fan or there's something with pedaling. I didn't know the Ali. That's cool. Okay.
Yeah,
Awesome.
I know the song. That one's pretty dope.
Atlanta Rise next year, correct?
Yeah.
What's cracking with that? So new, for those not familiar, new NCL squad, all Atlanta, or is it all Georgia-based people, or what's the vibe? It seems a little bit different than the couple other teams.
Yeah, it's mostly Georgia base. We do have a few guys outside of the state. I know Lucas Strain is out of the state, but he lived here last year. He's a really good friend. We were on Ride Bikes Bros last year together. But yeah, I'm excited because most of the people are local, and pretty optimistic. We'll have good turnouts at all the races. So we'll see.
What do you think of the format? So it, the obviously crit stuff. Well, do you consider yourself like a crit guy, a time trialist, all around? I mean, you smash road races. You're kind of one of those triple threat weapons. But is there something that you lean into more? What makes you laugh at that?
I've put myself on all the extremes. I'm laughing because I feel like I'm pretty good at like transforming my body. There's like 2000, I think 2021 or 2022, I was like really heavy in the gym, just focused on sprinting. I could, was hitting like 17, 18, 1900 watts every sprint, and like when like high 10, 15 second average, like riding 185, 190 pounds. Then the next year, or last winter, dropped weight. I was staying under 175, like busting out these crazy like threshold numbers, just super aerobic and skinny. And then raced in between, like race 180, kind of an all arounder. So I feel like I could do a lot with my body.
That's
But
wild.
what I prefer, I do kind of, well, my favorite racing is the Kermesses in Belgium. But I feel like what suits my natural, like what my body tends to want to do naturally is like the short burst anaerobic efforts. So my favorite workout are 30-30s. And I'll be rocking those in season, and I love it.
How many do you do when you do them? Are you doing like three
So
sets? Are you doing 10 minutes of it? What's the like nitty gritty?
I work up to it. So kind of like early season training, I'll really focus on being able to produce a high anaerobic power. So I might start with like 1 minute, minute and a half, work up to 2 minutes, just really high peak power for that duration. A complete recovery in between, and then I'll kind of transition into the repeatability and like kind of lactate clearance, and then I'll go to like something like the 30-30s. I usually keep most of my training pretty simple, but for the 30-30s, I might do the first couple workouts, do like sets of 12 or 13, and just
Okay.
like do two sets, so that would be 12 repetition of 30-30s. So you get 6 minutes of like working time, so to speak, but then your heart rate is elevated for the 12 minutes. So it's a good balance there with some cardiovascular adaptations. But ideally, when I'm like really rolling good, I'll do two sets of 16 30-30s. So
So
that's
8 minutes. And that, so do you do that 4 times, or so 8 and 8, so 16 minutes total, or 32 minutes total?
It's two sets of 16.
So
So
30.
kind of the total workout time is 32 minutes, but the
Got it.
total time producing power is 16.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you go full gas and let the watts degrade over time, or do you try and pace it at a particular percentage or number or any target, or how do you execute those?
So for the 30-30s, I would try to pace it kind of just pick a number and hold it.
Okay.
So let's say if like a person was wanting to average like 500 for the 30-30s, I mean, pretty much just try to hold 500, or you might. I tend to like, I think, negative pace everything. It's like I might start at like 480, ramp it up to like 510, 515. And then, towards the end, I always tend to really push myself with the averages. So I might, kind of overreach, within the interval, start at like 520 and then fade back down to 500. But when I'm kind of fresh, more fresh and in control, I try to negative pace everything.
Okay. Yeah, I'm always curious about those because some people, it's like full gas, like we'll stay with the 500 number. Full gas, they're doing 550. By the end of the set, they're doing 450. But they're like, well, my heart rate's up more initially. Da, da, da. They're looking maybe from more from the cardiovascular side. Other people talk about how you're saying, like, let me negative split and increase the watts as I go across. Other people kind of change if they're doing it, like you brought up, being fresh, or if they're doing it at the end of a ride. And so some have even said, I'm just doing it by RPE, like 9 out of 10. Like this really is not pleasant, but I'm not like fully killing myself. So what's when you brought up Belgium, what's like a good lesson that you brought from racing back there? What was that whole experience like? Because we quickly chatted when I was asking you what you were heading over there for, and I was like, you going for vacation? You're like, dude, the racing. I was like, oh, dude, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
And were you like, hey, I'm just gonna go to Belgium and race? Or was there what was the motivation and stuff?
So I've kind of wanted to go to Belgium, like race in Belgium the whole time I've been riding bikes.
How come?
Everybody's always told me I would do good there, and like that style of racing suits me. And it just, not really knowing anything about it. And coming up to the ranks, it just had this like prestigious aura to it, like kind of magical. Like, oh, that's where you go to, see what you could do on a bike. And the past few seasons, I've kind of been more focused on nationals and time trialing. I really wanted to win a amateur national time trial jersey, which has always seemed to slip away from my fingers every year, but,
Close.
I think, I've been racing bikes for a while and, always like going through different mental stages and everything. But this past year, I was, I don't know how long I'm going to keep racing. And this past year, I was in like better physical shape, better race shape, like better mentally than I ever have been. And I wasn't sure like if, be the same next season. So I wanted to do it while I still had it. And yeah, so just hopped over to Belgium and did my best.
And won twice, was it?
Yeah, I won two races. I got second in another race. Yeah, the
Yeah.
style of racing really suits me over there.
So what was that like? Explain that for people that have only heard of, like you said, people talk about Belgium and the racing, but what was it actually like being there?
Yeah, so I as far as the racing, I think I only did just a handful of races, maybe like 10. And I was racing mainly on the east side of Belgium, doing like 1.12 Bs. I did one 1.1A, but
How would you carry? Was that like a P12 race here? Is that like a?
man, I don't know, because they're just so different. So all the races I
Yeah.
did, they're pretty much dead flat. Might have like a little rise or a kicker, but I mean, no real hills. They're all around like a 5 or 6 kilometer loop through towns and the country roads. So they're all like 13, 15 laps. Every race was like 2.5 hours. Every race averaged, between 27, 30 miles an hour. And they're like full gas. It seemed like everybody was just like riding as hard as they could. Like you couldn't really like ride a bike any faster. People were constantly attacking, constantly following, bridging up. It was just literally full gas the whole time, and it seemed like the only time a brake would get away was if like the Peloton sat up for like just a split second, or just like nobody happened to like if there was just like a little separation, a little hesitancy between the group and the Peloton, you'd get a gap. But like I would be in the brake, we'd be doing 30 miles an hour. I'd be in the Peloton, we'd be doing 30 miles an hour. Like, it was just insane. Everybody was always going like the same speed.
We
But with
need
that
more circuit
said,
races in the US. I don't know why those
yeah.
don't exist anymore. There are a few oh, shoot, the big one up in Mass was God, used to be part of a stage race. It was like one of the most badass stages. And anytime, I think the last time I did a circuit race was like 10 years ago. That like 15 laps, 2.5 hours. It's like long enough that you need some endurance. Like it's you can't really get by on these hour training rides, but like damn, 2.5 hours full
Yeah.
gas is killer.
Yeah, I love that. It is the perfect duration because you do have to. I mean, I was having to ride as smart as possible and like conserve as much energy as possible. That was a big focus of mine, was just being smart and conservative. But you know, the races are so hard. Like people just get shattered. Like they're literally like at the bottom of their gas tank, you know, the last lap. Everybody is. Everybody's just shattered. And so what I was doing over there was, you know, being conservative, trying to get in the lead break, and then usually like between 2 and 4K out from the finish, I was just attacking right away. Because everybody's so blown, you know, like there's not really much teamwork in the races I was in. And then unless somebody follows you, like nobody is really going to chase you. So if you got the legs to keep your speed up to the finish line, you can stay away.
What's since the racing's different, is there anything that you learned over there that you felt like you could come back and apply to the big US races, whether it be something where you're punching at or above your weight, maybe at pronats or something, or even just at like, you know, a hard P12 regional race?
Just the focus on being, you know, conservative and racing smart, which like everybody always says that. Like it's kind of, you know, basic bike racing 101. And I mean, I was focused on it before I went over there, but being in the races over there and, you know, knowing just being in that intensity for 2.5 hours kind of really made me dial that into the next level.
So you kind of brought up just missing the top step at nationals. Is that a big focus for 2024, or when you're going through this period of your easy zone one rides, what are you thinking about in 2024? What's the big goal?
Probably the first year, I don't really have any goals. Just trying to have fun and just be like generally fit and athletic. Like I'm starting to run a little bit, extremely casually. You would not define me as a runner at all, but just trying to like enjoy kind of the athleticism I've been building for the past 10 years, you know, off the bike. But just looking to enjoy racing.
So, did this have some play in your sporadic trip to Japan?
No, completely unrelated.
What's you're going on that, and people have to go back and look at his Instagram post where it was like, hey, I didn't tell anybody about this, but I booked this ticket 3 days ago. Here I am, and you went on this backpacking just adventure. What was the inspiration for this then?
Hopefully I won't make this too long-winded, but
Oh, we're
I've
good.
always wanted to go to Japan. Always been fascinated with it.
What fascinates you about it?
I don't know, just their whole culture. I mean, they're completely different over there. Society, like the language, the food, everybody's just so respectful and polite, and everything is like just so orderly. It's another world because I've been to like different countries, and like the people themselves all have a similar vibe, just like kind of with different aesthetics or, you know, language. But over there, it was completely different. And it's kind of the whole history and everything just seems so like mystical or what or unknown to like a Westerner, you know. Just culture just seems like really peaceful and very mindful. So anyway, this past Thanksgiving, I haven't really been riding. Historically, like my life has been centered around cycling, like trying to ride as much as I can, all that. But I haven't really been riding much this fall. Just saw family, didn't really want to go travel to see them again on Thanksgiving. And I just kind of want to like have a low key time to myself. And a friend at work was like asking me what my Thanksgiving plans were because, you know, everybody has Thanksgiving plans. And this was like the Thursday before Thanksgiving, like a week before. And, you know, I told him like, oh, I don't have anything, like not doing anything. And then it kind of dawned on me, like, I'm not riding. I'm gonna have all this time off of work. I could like literally do whatever I wanted. So I checked flights, and flights to Japan were super cheap. It was like $1,100 round trip. And
Dang.
so Friday night, I booked a ticket to Japan. Didn't have housing, didn't have transportation, like didn't know anything. So booked a ticket Friday night. Departure was Tuesday morning. So yeah, just spent the next like every single waking hour trying to plan that trip out. And yeah, so got
And
over
you were like,
there.
I'm gonna
It was
go bike.
amazing.
So you're thinking I'm gonna go backpack through. Because I read the captions, so I know what happens. I mean, I have a bunch of questions. So you, what's the pl what were you planning to do? You're gonna go on this hike?
So I wanted to see
I love the long pause there. Like, where do I begin?
I've always been drawn to like kind of a spiritual experience in Japan.
Okay.
I've kind of always told myself if my life like gets really, really bad, if I'm like mentally at the worst, I wanted to go live in a monastery and become a monk just to try it.
What would be the bad? Just curious, when you sit, what would be bad in your life, or what would be the worst, or what would make things fall off? Like, what is that?
I don't know. I
You can
don't
pass. You can pass.
really. Yeah.
Okay.
Just yeah. Anyway. Let's see. So yeah, I've always kind of been drawn to their religious culture and their spirituality. And within the past couple of years, just randomly came across like this, I think it was called Segundo or something. I'm probably getting that pronunciation wrong, but they were doing these like spiritual pilgrimages through the mountains in Japan, like not talking, you know, dressed in traditional attire, you know, meditating, like little food or minimal food, doing these rituals at the shrines and stuff, and you know, just being present in the mountains and like I guess kind of rediscovering yourself. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. So I wanted to see, you know, some like real authentic historical, you know, less traveled path type stuff in Japan. And I came across this hike. I thought it'd be really cool to do. But then I got to researching it, and keep in mind, like, I'm flying out in like a day or two. So I don't really have time to really plan this. But I'm researching it, and people are saying you have to like book accommodation like 6 months in advance at the guest houses. My impression was that you wouldn't be able to get food along the trail unless you were at the guest houses. So I was like, man, like I'm not going to be able to book accommodation. I'm not going to be able to find food. And then by that point, my mind was pretty set on doing this hike if I went to Japan. And like I couldn't like reopen my mind to other possibilities, so I was like getting kind of bummed out, overwhelmed, and I took a break from planning and was like just playing on Instagram, and I came across this video of Dana White, who had just was talking about an 84-hour fast he did,
Oh my God.
And I was like, man, like that's pretty crazy. And then I got to thinking, I could just fast and camp, and that solves both of my issues. So I went to REI the next day, bought a bunch of camping gear because I'd never been camping before. Never been like backpacking or anything. So got all my stuff, flew over to Japan with my hiking bag and one change of clothes, and then had my last meal at midnight when I got over there, and just woke up the next morning at 6 a.m., took the trains out to the trail, and went on my little spiritual journey.
And how long was this supposed to be? Well, how long were you planning it to be?
The total route I was planning on doing, I think, was right around 68 kilometers. And they say online it takes between 4 and 5 days.
My God.
And, kind of being an elite endurance athlete, I had a very extreme false sense of confidence of my hiking ability, which would later be a comically false sense of confidence.
My God,
So I went
dude.
over there anticipating to do, like 12-hour days on the trail, hiking fast, and doing it in 3 days. So 3 days of hiking, 3 days of camping, then I'd bus back to town. Come to find out, hiking is extremely difficult, and I'm very bad at it. And I was hiking at a comically slow pace. And long story short, I did half of the anticipated journey. But still did 2 full days of hiking, 2 nights of camping. And definitely definitely got more out of it than I could have hoped for, even though I did half the trail.
Can you share what you got out of that? The deepest thing that you took from that.
Man, I don't know how to put it in words. Like, I don't know how to put the takeaway in words, but what I'll tell you is like my experience. So, like I said, I didn't tell anybody I was going, except for a couple of friends I invited who I thought would, who would be down to go with me on some crazy spontaneous adventure. Unfortunately, they couldn't make it, but didn't tell anybody I was going, so I was kind of had that like isolation from the start. While I was on the trail, wasn't playing on my phone, like wasn't listening to music, wasn't on social media or anything. And so I really kind of isolated myself while I was on the trail. And you don't really see any other people out there. Like I probably passed like maybe 5 people total in the 2 days. Being in the fasted state was a cool experience. Like just a different level of calmness and clarity that fasting brings to everything. And so, yeah, just being out on in the Japanese wilderness on is literally like a sacred like pilgrimage route that's been there for over 1,000 years. So you're just kind of immersed in this like spiritual energy out in nature, disconnected from everybody, and just with your thoughts and nothing else. So just trying to meditate, just thinking about life, thinking about how my mind works while I was out there. And I was underprepared, wore the probably the worst possible footwear choice you
I was going
could.
to ask you if you had hiking boots, which I'm guessing is a no. Oh my God, I can't even imagine that.
I wore these like minimalist shoes because they looked cool.
Oh, dang.
I was kind of into like strengthening my feet, building up my feet before the trip. Kind of jump into extremes whenever I do something, and
I was
this
like,
was
it's not, you had 2 days,
definitely,
so I don't know how much training you got done.
very stupid decision.
Oh.
A little too optimistic, but
What was the
yeah,
temperature and
so
altitude? Were you at altitude?
not at altitude.
Okay, thank
During
God.
the day, the temperature was probably like 60 or 70. It was pretty nice in the sun. And then at night, it would dip down, in the 40s. But yeah, the footwear, going back to the feet, my feet were completely like smashed. The last 2 hours of the first day of hiking was the worst pain I'd ever been in, second to my Tulsa crash. And I mean, like with every step, like it was pretty bad. That first night, making my way to the campsite on that first night in the dark, hardly able to walk. Like I was like taking half steps. If I stepped on like a rock or a pebble, I would
Oh,
like
dude.
collapse out of like the pain. Just I was really messed up and very emotional. Like it pretty much like mentally broke me that first night, and I couldn't believe it, but I was able to recover a good bit that first night. I woke up the next morning, went to like their hot baths they have, massaged out my muscles, tore all of the pages out of my notebook, folded them up, put them in my shoes to like reinforce the insoles, and then I was like, able to limp along a bit. And yeah, set out again that next day, having to cover like almost twice the distance I did in the first day. So that was a pretty big commitment I jumped in on.
The paper help in the shoes.
Oh yeah, it helps tremendously. The notebook paper.
For people that
Yeah,
haven't
I
hiked,
mean,
I mean, I've hiked in North Carolina, and I have hiking boots that people are like, you need the stiff sole. And then a day I just had my sneakers, I did the same exact route. It was brutal on my feet. So I cannot even imagine minimalist shoes hiking for that long. I mean,
The shoes I had, you could literally roll them up and put them in your pants pocket.
I know. Are they Vivo?
Very similar. They're a German brand, I think. They're called Wildlings.
Okay.
Very cool shoes, but
Just not for hiking.
yeah. But going back to the experience thing, that second day, just being out in the mountain range by yourself in nature, like just alone with your thoughts. Every single step is like a meditation on pain and suffering and acceptance. It
Wow.
sounds dramatic, but it was pretty intense.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, fasting and in that environment, it's even. I'll go on a 3 mile hike, and there's a lot of places where I live that don't have cell service. So even as I drive to the trailhead, it's like the phone goes out, and I'll still bring my phone with me. I sometimes don't know why, but just not being able to communicate, not being able to send a text to somebody if I want to, is a different feeling than having the capability in your pocket and not doing it. I don't know what that is or what the brain, how my brain processes that, but I can only imagine being in Japan and doing that. And where do you think the next, would you go on another random adventure like this in the future? Like, has it fueled you to want to do this again? Just spin the globe and pick a cool place? Or where does this take you?
Yeah, I've always wanted to do adventures like this. I've always had like a full-time job with a limited vacation. So like I've always had to like, I mean, all my vacation time's gone to bike racing, which is, severely limited these other adventures. But it's something I've always been wanting to do. The Japan trip has definitely helped me overcome kind of the fear aspect of jumping into the unknown. I don't think it could get much gnarlier than just hopping over to Japan on 4 days' notice by myself. But one experience I've always thought would be cool, and this is like a very, very specific imagery, but I've always wanted to go to the Middle East and just like be dressed in, the traditional attire, riding like camels or horses or something through the desert, like under the moonlight, like very specific imagery and scenario, but something like that would be an amazing adventure.
That sounds dope. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it's funny that you bring up the. So, what do you do? What's your day job?
I work with a construction company and we build new apartment complexes, and I just work on the computer all day, kind of doing price estimation, CAD drawings, just
Okay. Yeah.
stuff like that.
When you talk about, like, the vacation time going to bike racing, I've thought about that a lot, and I think of how I thought last season and kind of the like, what was my why for bike racing? And going through that was not only a good thing that it made me realize how much I do love training and I do love racing, but it's also made me reflect a little bit more on the non-bike time that I choose to spend. And I guess I say that in like, I was talking to my husband Chris about what we wanted to do. I'm kind of like already planning 2025. I'm like, all right, we're not going to do a big trip this year. Like, we should do something like mega next year. Where haven't you been? And we were talking about Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and possibly Thailand. And immediately my brain is like, ooh, that's going to be hard to bring a bike there. And then the thing I've just went through was like, yo, dude, are you seriously worried about the bike when you're like, I love to travel? Like, I should not have any ooh feeling towards that. And so you brought up running, and it's something that I've slowly kind of been dabbling my feet. Well, I shouldn't say slowly. The third run, I don't know if I like pulled my, I've, the internet tells me it's the soleus. Like, my leg kind of like blew up. Something was angry at me. But I'm like, hey, I should at least be able to jog. And then I thought, dude, I haven't ran in 7 years. Like, if you told me to go run 5 miles, I couldn't. And that made me sort of disappointed in myself as what I would consider myself an athlete, but I can't beat some people in a 5 mile race. Like, that's kind of pathetic. So I'm kind of like building up to that. I love strength training in the gym, and it's just interesting to hear you say something similar of, looking at a full athlete profile, not maybe spending all of my time to only bike racing. And I think in pulling back a little bit, it will help amplify the bike racing that I do, and that some other activities in the mix and adventures will probably only help my longevity as being an athlete. So I'll definitely be thinking of your comment as I go through, like, I don't want to say like mental processes, but like whenever I think about that, I think it's natural. And I think a lot of newer athletes freak out when they start to have those thoughts. And that's one thing I try to always tell people is like, it's okay to not be hyped on going to this race. And maybe you shouldn't go. Maybe you need to tell your team, hey, for X, Y, and I'm just not in this. This is not working out right now. Because we all put so much pressure on ourselves once we commit and get into it. And you had brought up like this kind of the spiritual side of the trip. Are you in there? Japan is mostly Buddhist, is that right? And you meditate? Are you into like religious vibes or meditation on a daily, or was this more just like a trip spiritual thing?
I've always been into it, kind of like since high school. I've started learning about Buddhism and stuff, and it's been a while since, like, you could say I've like actually like studied the religion or and their practices. But I've always been into the kind of the spiritual and psychology and perspective side of things, and this past year I've been like reading a lot of, you kind of call them self-improvement books or whatever, but just trying to learn more about how my brain works and how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive time, and it's kind of how we label every interaction and every event. Like we, yeah, just going into how the mind works.
Any books that as you're talking about this come to mind that you're like specifically thinking about? Because it sounds super interesting.
Yeah, so one of the books I recently read was Wherever You Go, There You Are. I think that's the title of the book. And then one I just finished reading a couple days ago was called Already Free by Bruce Tift. Discovered that through a Tim Ferriss recommendation. But Already Free by Bruce Tift, that was a very dense read.
TIFF, TIFF.
TIFT.
TIFT, got it.
Yeah, and he's actually a psychologist. He's been practicing for 40 or 45 years, and he blends Western practices with Buddhism because he studied both. And that was a really dense book. That was really good information in that. But yeah, I'm just trying to always be mindful and conscious of, what we're thinking and why we think it.
Rick Rubin just came out with his book, Creative Act, I want to say. And it's on, it's he, you know, Rick Rubin. Do you know him? He's like a
I've heard the
producer.
name.
Yeah, so he's a producer, worked with like Beastie Boys, every big name from, I think Run DMC to Pop People Now. It's funny when he talks about what he provides. Like, he's not a technical producer, but he's there for like flow and just has, he says, strong opinions on what sounds good and what doesn't. And he's very kind of like Zen Buddhist monk-ish. And his book is interesting. I'm only about halfway through, but it's very small chapters, a lot of little things that some are super, like a couple of paragraphs that like hit really hard. And it's like, ooh, I need to remember this, and just how creativity unfolds and how to work through like blocks that we hit and when to keep going and when to cut something. And that we're all creating our own art, or we should be, for ourselves, not for the other people around us. And that when one thing that I just read that really kind of resonated, if you're making something that really matters, half the people are going to hate it right away. And I think like a classic example is Hey Ya by Outkast. People were telling Andre, if you put this song out, your career's over. And it's probably one of the biggest songs of our generation. So yeah, it's interesting. Buddhism, I was taking a world religions class. So at the age of 20 or 19, I can't even remember what the reading sparked, but the professor being like, the whole point is that there's not a finite amount of goodness. Like, your friend getting theirs doesn't mean you're not going to get yours. And as an immature and, me focused, hungry for my own success, it was like, oh yeah, okay. Maybe I do need to root for the other guy just as much as I'm rooting for myself, because them winning doesn't mean I'm losing. And it's just such a simple thought. But I think for me at that age, it was like, ooh, yeah, I need to look around at what other religions are. I wish I had this other book. There's one that's like I can't remember the title. It basically looks at all these different religions and does like 5-page synopses and just like high points to like taste it. And it was just really cool. I found it randomly in this bookstore. But anyway,
That sounds good, yeah.
yeah, it was interesting. It had like a religion section, it had like a science section, it had like famous political viewpoints or something. It was a weird like conglomeration of thought. Yeah. I'll have to look it up. Okay, what do you think has, usually I ask this cycling specific, but for you, I think it's more like maybe training or even life adventuring. What do you think that you've learned? Let's go with life, about life, that's made you better at living life. About better at living, I kind of hate the term, but your best life, like you continue to grow and improve.
I'm trying to think of how to like phrase it. The book I just finished reading kind of covers it very well, the Already Free book. I think a lot of people kind of grow up with these defense mechanisms around certain emotions or feelings or like insecurities, and they kind of carry that with them in their adult life, and they just like need to allow themselves to be more vulnerable and open to different experiences and open to different, ways of living, different people, and just realize that like their way isn't the right way. Like nobody's way of doing anything is the right way. They're just different. And so just to be like more open to new ideas and such, and kind of become aware of your insecurities, and there's another word I'm trying to think of. I'm blanking right now, but just don't be so defensive about stuff and be open and enjoy and love life.
Yeah, I think it's easy for me to project my insecurity to other people. If I'm, this is, I don't feel strong about this. Well, let me put this person down in my head and that'll make me feel better. It's like, oof, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's not the way. Oh man. We were kind of chatting about nutrition off the bike and on the bike, but when I just bring up nutrition, what's your like style of eating?
It varies a lot. I mean, even with training, like I'm always experimenting and trying new stuff. Currently, so let me back up a bit. Pretty much like most of my life, I've eaten a ton of food. I just like I'll get to eating and I can't stop until I'm like physically like at my max capacity. Like
That's how.
even when I'm full, I like want to eat more. And part of that initially was like how I was raised, like small southern town, like everybody, like you're supposed to be like big and eat a lot and all this crap. So I was kind of raised like that, but I realized, I mean, despite my conscious efforts of trying to eat less, it was like extremely hard to control, or like limit how much I was eating, even though my stomach was full. Like no hunger pains or whatever. I just like wanted to keep snacking. And so I was did some research recently on like your insulin response and blood sugar levels and like how that's influencing your perception of hunger. And so which has shaped how I'm currently eating, which is like low carb. I'm basically trying to like minimize insulin response with my current diet. And trying to eat less, eat like a normal person. Trying to slim up a bit, burn some fat. Because, snacking all the time, eating high carb for my body, I think I just like either had constantly elevated blood sugar, elevated insulin, like something was out of whack and was making me feel hungry all the time. And so the reason I eat the way I do right now is just simply to try to get a control over my appetite
That's
and
interesting.
stabilize the blood, like the hormones and stuff.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, God, I have so many things. There, Tim Podlegar is a up-and-coming nutritionist. Guys like Asker, Juk, and Drew point to him as like the future of sports science. And we were chatting about carbs because he made a comment about maybe 120 grams isn't the best way to go. And maybe we need to be going in at like 60 to 90 grams and then only ramping the carbs up at our like 2.5 till the end of the ride or race up to 5 hours. And I'm going to get him on, but we were kind of chatting about a couple things. And in this past year, I've just had some issues with. I really believe it's been way too many carbs, or just it might just have been also a decade of carb loading. And what I thought I could just, I was riding so much, and everything's like more carbs, train your gut to eat more carbs. Like the more carbs you process, the faster you are. And I don't think I would have noticed this. I think my body is slowing down a little bit, almost 42, or maybe it is just the duration of doing this, but I'm kind of with you on the. Off the bike. I'm very new to this. In the past 3 weeks, I've made massive changes that have made drastic changes to how I feel. I always wondered what was inflammation. I didn't know what that was until I'm realizing how much looser I feel and how much more fluid I feel on the bike. And it really, I wouldn't have gone down this road if I didn't have this back pain that came up. And, it's just been an interesting adventure. There's going to be, I'm going to have a lot to talk about because I've been so pro carb for so long. And yeah, I'm curious how I'm not going no carb. And right now I would say I'm in like in between carnivore and keto. And I do think carb is still important for hard efforts, maybe. But then there's guys like Tim Noakes. I don't know if you know the name. I was talking to him on Twitter, and he's like, "Just go fat. That is the rocket fuel." And I'm like, "This is crazy." But I don't know. I did a really solid 5 hour endurance ride, on 60 grams of carbs total, which
Dang.
normally, yeah,
It's not
normally,
much.
it's not much. It was 1,000 grams of walnuts. And then I had a chocolate bar, and I brought candy with me as like 911 and just put it in my frame bag. And so I'm like, man, maybe I think I could do it on no carbs. Like I don't know what I would put in a flask, like MCT oil or something. And some people I know, there's a guy who's reached out to me back from pro carb stuff. He is carnivore, and he's like, dude, I don't eat on these 4 hour rides. the thing we have gone back, he's a cat four. He's like, listen, you're burning way more. Maybe that's a thing to think about. But I'm like, dude, I just did this on 60 grams of carbs. Like that, I would normally bring 600 grams of carbs. That, let's talk about inflammatory response. Like it's gonna be crazy, crazy different. So we'll see where it goes. But yeah, that's interesting. I think balance is key. And
I never thought about the inflammation in the context of like while you're consuming carbs, while you're racing
so
or riding.
this is depending on who you talk to, so far from what I've gathered and trying to talk to people smarter than me about this, some are like, well, you're utilizing that fuel, it's no big deal, whatever type of carb you eat. Other people are saying, well, there's still going to be byproducts. So you burn a piece of paper, like smoke comes up. Like there's things, you're burning something in your body. This guy that I'm seeing, and I don't want to overtake this podcast about my story, but I'll just quickly share. It's like I did different PTs. I did dry needling. I was doing 30-minute stretching routines. I was doing this type of exercise. I was strengthening this. I was removing this. So over 2 years, tried all these different modalities where like it would work. I'm like, oh, I got it. And then it would come back. And then, oh, wait, no. Now you go see this person. Da, da, da. Finally ended up on this Chinese medicine guy who's from Spain, has trained in Thailand and China for over 20 years, I want to say at this point, and Eduardo. And he was like, dude, you need herbs. He's like, you're super tense, you're super tight. And when I told him what I was eating, he's like, wait, you're actually eating that many carbs? And I'm like, well, and a lot of it's sugar and like maple syrup. And he's like, dude, that's your problem. And I'm like, no, probably not. And he's like, probably. So I'm like, I've just like, whatever. Okay. I'm going to see what you do, what you have to say. And in a week and a half, it like started to my, I was like turning. I'm like, oh my God, dude, I'm so loose and like mobile. What is going on? And
And
then
he
the
was saying
next
it's
one,
because of the inflammation reduction.
I think so.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
Huh.
I have two more questions for you. If you got it,
Oh
if you got
yeah.
time.
Oh, plenty of time.
You had a post on Instagram and the caption was just make every second feel like two. Yeah.
So that was a quote that a mutual friend of my best friend who passed away said. So, my best friend, or one of my best friends, Travis Rust, he was not a cyclist, but he was taught me a lot about health and athletics and everything. He's big into the ninja, American Ninja Warrior. He was really good on that. But he was, dude, he was like physically, like capability, he was incredible. And man, there's so much to say about him. Like that's like the way he thought and his advice and everything. And he was just so influential and inspirational. Like, I mean, he inspired pretty much everybody he came in contact with. It was crazy. So where was it going? Oh, the quote. So yeah, he passed away on in a motorcycle accident, completely unexpected, of course, just crazy. And one of his roommates, a really good friend of his, now a friend of mine, in his little write-up about Travis passing away, he said one of his favorite quotes that Travis used to say was make every second count, or make every second feel like two, or whatever it was. And I'm a bit embarrassed to say I'm kind of blanking on the exact meaning of that. I'm gonna have to reach out to our friend to kind of get some clarification. But if I were just to sit here and interpret it right now, I would think, just slow down and live in the present moment, and stop worrying about, stop trying to live in the future, stop fearing the future, don't be letting the past drag you behind. Just be present, slow time down, and live now.
Yeah, I think that's That's sort of how I was interpreting it just from reading it. And I think the picture was great. Someone was like, "What are you guys, what seance are you guys at?" And I was like, "This is, I love this." And I
Oh, we
think,
were on the dock.
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just one of my hangups is that I project like insecurities into the future. And somebody in this group I'm in is like, it's funny, we worry about all these things in the future that never actually happen. Like half the stuff plus is just, why are you worrying about that? And yeah, it's just so when you say not looking back, but looking forward and being present, it's just interesting how time all relates. And you brought up time before, and I heard this really interesting podcast about how, as humans, why are we so bad at understanding our future self? And they had these neuroscientists that were looking at the way our brain reacts when we think of ourselves, when we think of other people, and when we think of someone say, hey, however they trigger you to think of yourself in the future, the brain maps it more as if we're thinking of someone else. So we're not even thinking of it as ourselves. We don't even see our future self as us. It's someone totally different than us. So yeah, being present has been something I've been really trying to focus. God, we could go on a wormhole on this.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
getting married has changed how I think about some of that stuff and like my day-to-day actions. But my last question for you, what are you trying to improve on going in? So we're recording this a couple days before the new year. We won't post this until probably like late February, March. As we go into 2024, what are you trying to improve on this year?
So not with cycling, but pretty conscious goals that I've, been slowly working towards. It's like flexibility, like mobility. I would like to get comfortable running. And these are pretty like surface level things. But like deeper is just being more mindful, more present, more aware. Kind of want to learn more about like somatic practices and stuff and bring awareness back to my body. So it is more like mental, spiritual type of work I'm
What does that mean? What's
gravitating
somatic practice
towards.
mean? What does that mean?
So my understanding is bringing your awareness back to your body.
Okay.
And I had a friend who is studying this or practicing it, learning about it. He walked us through like this 20-minute meditation, somatic focused, and it was pretty crazy, like how your perception of your body and awareness just was able to change that quickly. I was kind of explaining this to Forrest a couple of days ago, surprise visit by him. We had an excellent session at the gym together, but my knowledge of somatic practice is extremely elementary right now, but the way I described it to him was, typically, I feel like most of us, our reality is kind of stuck in our thinking mind and is also kind of dominated by our sense of vision. So our whole perception of the world is, kind of our vision and then our interpretation of things, which, you can't really, interpretations are biased, obviously. And so with a somatic practice, it brings the awareness, kind of, out of your mind and back into your body. And it was wild. It felt like the center of myself, like the center of my awareness had shifted after that session with my friend temporarily. It's something definitely requires a lot of practice, but yeah, I mean, you're just simply more aware of your body. You're less, you get pulled out of your thinking brain and, anxiety, fear, insecurities, judgments of others, all that's immediately reduced. And I was trying to practice this a bit while hiking in Japan, out on the trail. It
Oh, dude, I wish we could get like the brain thoughts from that because that's
was,
wild.
yeah, part of it is like we're so dominated by our thinking mind, but like your body knows how to do stuff. Like your body knows, can kind of like operate on its own, so to speak. And so one of the things Like one of the brief experiences I had it numerous times while hiking, but it was very brief. Like it takes a lot of practice. But I was kind of like trying to bring my awareness back to like my body and, really like reduce my reliance on vision. Obviously trying to like reduce my thinking mind, which was extremely difficult. But there was times I was literally just zoning out. That might not be the best word, but I stopped worrying so much about like where I was walking, and was kind of just like letting my body walk without thinking about where I was going, without thinking about what steps I was taking, just like letting my body figure it out, and then stopped like focusing so much on my vision, was like trying to tune into my hearing, listening to the birds, leaves, squirrels and all that. And like it's really hard to describe, but I wasn't like you could say like I almost wasn't like paying attention to where I was walking. I wasn't paying attention to where I was stepping. And I was just kind of like aware without thinking of my vision. And like in those like very brief moments, everything was like incredibly beautiful. Like even just like the leaves on the ground. It was like it was crazy. But then as soon as I acknowledged it, and as soon as I thought about what I was perceiving, it like went away. So there's just like a lot of crazy stuff out there. Like we don't.
Yeah, that's like a pretty transcendental experience, but it's
Yeah.
interesting when you say like you became more conscious of the whole thing happening and it kind of disappeared in that. I mean, the reality that we create around us is like the thing that I've always been curious slash freaked out about is like the gaps that we fill in, that we our biases of how we think the world treats us, how we want to treat other people, like are all of our we all can go out and watch the same exact thing and we interpret it totally differently. And yeah, it's just the human brain, our
Dude,
condition, freaking wild.
I was literally, I mean, I've been trying to be more conscious of this for several, for a few years now, but like literally on the way home, from the gym yesterday, there was like some crazy person just driving like a maniac. And at first, like your kind of initial response is like you feel attacked, you feel threatened by it. And like you kind of get like angry at that person and all and everything. But I mean, they're just like living their own life. Like what you think is going on in their mind is like probably not what's going on in their mind. Like they're just driving their car differently. Not to go too off topic, like, you could debate that a lot, but I guess the takeaway is like you don't know people's intentions and like you don't know what they're thinking, but I think especially in Western culture, we just perceive others through our intent, like our thought processes and securities and everything.
Totally. Can't take those things personally. It's so easy to internalize when it's just, yeah. I'm trying to think of what the catch and release in meditation. Like sometimes I just do that for like, oh, this is happening right now. I see it. I'm experiencing it. I don't like it. I'm just gonna let that go and move on. And sometimes that's now me just not really responding to somebody. I mean, like, yeah, I'm gonna let that one fly. See ya.
Yeah,
It's
exactly.
freeing. I need to get better at practicing that. But any final words for the people? This was awesome, man. I really appreciate you doing this.
Well, so this is a cycling podcast, so my
But do you
advice
know what
is
actually, hold on, before you say your thing, I did one with Eno Kenti Zav I'm gonna crush your last name, Eno Zavalov, I think. He's a gravel racer. Do you know him?
I do not know.
We had a really good podcast that we recorded, and we were just talking about like the flow of podcasts. And I usually before have had more kind of like scripted questions, and a couple friends were like, I think it would be cool if you just you're kind of an easy person to talk to. Just go talk to these athletes. Like, don't really talk to them what you're interested about, and not necessarily what all their workouts are. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I did one with Eno, and I was like, what do you think of this podcast? And he had heard the podcast before. He's like, dude, I love this. And I was like, okay, well, you were my guinea pig. Like, I tried to do this with Riley Pickerell that you just listened to, and I like got nervous and like went back to my script. And so you're like one of the newer, and I was just super pumped to talk to you. And then as we were chopping it up about Japan or stretching and random things, I'm like, dude, we gotta do a podcast on like just this stuff. So yeah, it's a cycling podcast, but really this is more the Brock Mason podcast today. So leave us
Thank you.
with wherever. It doesn't have to be cycling specific. No pressure now. I killed your vibe, sorry, but it felt like it was important.
Just going back to the racing thing, and it's something I actually wanted to say earlier, but we just kind of got distracted. But yeah, just have fun, and like I think kind of once I realized I could be good at racing with kind of like my power and engine and everything, it was a bit high pressure, intimidating, stressful. Like now, like getting the hang of racing, like now I got to perform, and that could really stress you out. But I just so there are several things I did which helped absolutely tremendously. And first one is obviously have fun, and try to relax. Like, don't get so hyped, don't get so amped up. It's just a bike race, it's just a group ride. Like, I would just go to these races no matter what they were, like even Athens Twilight. I just like told myself, I'm only here to go as fast as possible, as easy as possible for as long as I can. Like you can't replicate the experience you get in a race outside of racing. So like, I'm just trying to go as fast as I can, as easy as I can, for as long as I can. And then, as you get closer to the finish line, I'd always, and I was doing this heavy in Belgium, chunking the race into goals. So a lot of people like might show up to a race and they're like, oh, goals like a top five, like a goals like I want to win this race. And then they like run through all these hypothetical situations or scenarios of like how the race might go down. Race never works out like that. Then they're thrown off and they're like all stressed and everything. So kind of my method to approaching racing and getting good results is to chunk it into bits and set goals. So like for an example, normal crit race, no breakaway, or even if there is a breakaway, whatever. But I might approach the race, obviously, let's say the race is 1 hour. So like make it 45 minutes with good legs, like conserve energy to the 45-minute mark. And I'm not concerned about anything after that until I reach that goal at the 45-minute mark. And then, okay, 10 laps left. So with 5 laps to go, I need to be like top 20. Not concerned about anything after that point until I get myself into the top 20 with 5 laps to go. Okay, like 3 laps to go, like move up, top 10. Not concerned about the finish, not concerned with anything, because if I'm not top 10 with 3 laps to go, like nothing else matters. So I'm not even concerned with it. Then, like, final lap. Like I gotta be like sixth, seventh position, out of turn two, like sixth position going into turn three. I don't care about the finish. Like, finish is gonna play out how it plays out. My race is my entire goal is to be like sixth or seventh wheel going into turn three. And like that's all I focus on. And then you come out of turn four and you just sprint. And so ever since I kind of thought to do this, this is how I've raced, is taking it one bit at a time and not trying to consume the whole race at once. And that's helped out tremendously.
That's awesome. I love that. That's how would you recommend someone figure out their chunks?
That's a good question.
I kind of like though that it's almost there's like a big first one. Like it's or maybe it's work backwards. That might be beneficial to like think through how to play devil's advocate, then what if the chunks don't work out?
Just go with the flow.
Yeah.
I
Just go with the flow,
mean,
people.
yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of another thing. Like, back when I was really bad at racing, I just like overthought way too much.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like, past couple years, you get in races and I mean, you can't help but think, like, you're always thinking, but my mind is not like what's executing in the race. Like, my body is executing in the race. And like kind of like what we were mentioning earlier, it's like your body knows how to operate. Your mind really just holds it up and stalls it. And so like while I'm racing, I'm not consciously like I'll have these goals, but I'm not letting my mind dictate what I'm doing. I'm letting the race play out and letting my body respond. Like there's been numerous times. In fact, I think this was one of the times I or the first podium or the first win I got in Belgium, my body just acted and it like actually surprised me. I was like, oh wow, I guess I'm attacking right now. Like it just happened spontaneously. It wasn't like something I thought or was thinking or was planning. Like I had you have like a general plan, like all right, maybe I should try to ride away like this lap right away with like 4 or 5K to go or something. But then it's not like, okay, I'm gonna attack at this specific time, like in this specific scenario. It's just you kind of have your intentions in the back of your mind, and then your body executes it when it's the right time.
A window
Takes
of
a lot of
some sort,
trust.
oh yeah, a window opens and the reaction just happens. It's like I always think of if you think go now, if so, that thing in your head is like go now. If I am like, oh, this thing is telling me to go, should I da da da? Like if you start to calculate it, that's over. Like it's gone, it's left. See ya, you missed it.
All
I think that's
those,
good.
yeah, like past couple of years, like getting the break at twilight, and like all the like biggest results of my racing and like kind of like the most impressive like feats or whatever. I just like I wasn't thinking. Like my body just reacted.
You just
So you
raced.
definitely, yeah, just race. Just trying to go as fast as I can, as long as I can, as easy as I can. That's the
There you
secret.
go. That is the recipe. I love that. It's not
And
who
don't
pedals the
worry about
hardest,
the
but who.
results.
Yeah, I think that's huge. Letting go of that, especially just mentally not having that burden. You just race so differently. It like it's just so crucial, especially when you're
Because
trying to race at a race that has stronger riders. On paper, you can't mentally conceive yourself beating them. But if you just go race, crazy things happen. So, what's Instagram? What's the other best ways for people to follow along? Strava, or you blog, or anything else like that?
No, it's just Instagram. I have a
Cool.
Strava, but I've been staying off of it for a while. I just trying to,
IG.
just Instagram.
Guys, thanks for listening. Hit them up. We'll post the link because it's Pedal Beaumier and you might not be able to spell that. And we appreciate you taking the time to hear about Brock and his adventures. And we'll talk to you guys soon.